Now, President Biden and Vice President Harris are on the road this week selling the public on some of the details of the American Rescue Plan, the nearly $2 trillion pandemic relief and economic recovery plan the president signed into law last week. The legislation had no support from Republicans in Congress, but Democrats in the Senate were able to narrowly pass it through a special process called reconciliation. That's not going to be an available option for all their major goals. So that makes the filibuster and possible reforms to the filibuster a more pressing issue. There have been calls from some Democrats, at least, to change, maybe even end the filibuster as we know it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about the filibuster, how it works, how it came to be, how it's changed over the years? And do you think Democrats, with their slim majority in the Senate, should change how it's used or get rid of it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or do you think it should stay as is? Call in, or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Eleanor Neff Powell is the Booth Fowler Associate Professor of Political Science and Trice Faculty Scholar at UW-Madison. Ellie, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, can you give us a summary? I mean, I think we all have a sort of sense of what the filibuster is. Can you let us know how it works in its current form in the Senate?
So basically, the filibuster is a delay process. So it prevents the majority from moving on to actually hold a vote. So a filibuster sort of prevents anything from actually moving. And the problem from the Democrats' perspective is that right now it requires 60 people, a supermajority, more than half the chamber, to break a filibuster. And the Democrats, you know, only have 50 seats plus Vice President Harris, the barest of majorities. So basically, they can't do anything much in the Senate with the filibuster rules in place.
And the filibuster, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think the word filibuster is in the U.S. Constitution. This is something that's evolved, as I understand it, within the Senate as its rules. Can you give us a sense of how it has grown and changed over the years?
So this is something that's changed dramatically over the course of American history. This is something that, you know, it used to be that, you know, there was no way to end debate. And, you know, that was fine in the early days of the Senate. It was very, very rarely used. People didn't usually use these delay tactics. And even, you know, moving up forward, you know, into the 60s, you know, the filibuster technique or tactic was used, you know, often by Southern Democrats to block civil rights reform. But it was used on the sort of most sacred issues to them, right? It was very rarely deployed. It wasn't used on all legislation. And really, this is something that's changed dramatically. So over the course of American history, we've put in place a way to end a filibuster. We've changed the voting threshold. So it used to require 67 votes or sort of two-thirds. Now it's only 60 votes. It used to apply to everything. Now nominations are exempt. Now some budget things are exempt. So there's lots of changes that have happened over the course of American history, or even over the course of the last several decades.
So if I'm a senator and I want to filibust, if that's a verb, what do I have to do? How do I make that happen, given that I don't have to make that whatever 30-hour speech on the Senate floor?
Yeah, this is something where, like, the old school, like, TV movies that showed filibusters, the sort of Mr. Smith Get to Washington movies, made it look like you have to talk and talk and talk to do a filibuster. Now it's super easy. You basically just tell your party, hey, I'm filibustering this, and that's it. That's done.
All right. Now, there's this talk of changing the filibuster, getting rid of it, or saying, we'll keep it, but you got to go back to talking, or we're going to keep it, but instead of having the 60 votes to make it end, you have to have 41 votes to make it keep going. Can you look at some of the different options on the table right now?
Yeah, so there are a bunch of different options that people are talking about, and, you know, they have sort of different potential implications. So, you know, one of them that gets a lot of attention is moving to the talking filibuster. So make it harder for somebody to filibuster, that, you know, they have to go and talk on the floor of the House. They have to have this sort of endurance mentality, the way we used to think of old school filibusters. Well, that is actually how old school filibusters used to work. And the Senate moved away from that in part because it blocked the Senate from doing anything else, right? It took control of the floor, and it meant the Senate couldn't get to any of their other business. So the advantage of the silent filibuster process that we have now is, sure, that piece of legislation is blocked because the filibuster is happening, but the Senate can move forward with all of the rest of its agenda. if you move back to the talking filibuster, you know, it allows, yes, it's a, there's a burden on the person talking, although the way people typically you'd set it up is, you know, one Republican could talk and he gets tired, he can tap in another Republican. And when he gets tired, he can tap in another Republican. And so you sort of take shifts and the burden, you know, changes. You can be sort of distributed among a bunch of people who, you know, support blocking the legislation. Meanwhile, the people in the majority who want to actually pass the thing and move on have to all sit there, because as soon as the person stops talking, a vote could happen. And so you have to have all, you know, 60 senators sitting there waiting overnight, waiting to break the filibuster, whereas only you have to have one person talking at a time. So it is onerous on the person talking, but it's also onerous on the majority to actually try to break a talking filibuster. And it allows, you know, McConnell and the Republicans to potentially sort of run out the clock on the Senate agenda, because it prevents the Senate from moving on any other business. So there's sort of some advantages and disadvantages to moving to the talking filibuster model.
We're talking about the past, present, and future of the filibuster in the U.S. Senate with Eleanor Neff Powell from UW-Madison, Associate Professor of Political Science, and with you if you have thoughts and or questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Daniel is with us in Milwaukee. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I guess I'm perplexed because I feel like this is a lesson we already have learned when it came to the federal and Supreme Court judicial appointee nominations. And now we have an overwhelmingly conservative federal bench and Supreme Court. And I just feel like these things are short-sighted and they're dangerous for when control eventually changes back.
Daniel, thanks for that call. And the quick history, I think, Ellie, is Democrats under Harry Reid loosened up the filibuster for lower court appointments because they were being blocked by Republicans. Republicans loosened it up for Supreme Court appointments so they couldn't be limited by Democrats. What do you think of what Daniel had to say?
I mean, it's a great point that the party's perspective on the filibuster completely depends whether they're in the majority or the minority. So the Democrats are in the majority now. They hate the filibuster. As soon as they're in the minority, they love it and it's a vital tool. And the same thing is true for the Republicans on the reverse. So Democrats would, you know, benefit in the short term, but the next time the Republicans get control of the Senate, which, you know, very easily could be in 2022, the benefits would shift to the Republicans. So it is sort of a careful thing, although I think it's worth keeping in mind that it's been such a slippery slope with the filibuster over the last few years. We've had so many erosions and weakenings of the rule. It's also possible that the Republicans could change the rule when they get into power. And so the Democrats would sort of lose on their opportunity to do things now when by changing the rule first. So it's this tough calculation in terms of time horizons and cost benefit. And of course, you know, whether you think change has value is necessary now, or whether you think the status quo existing policy is okay, and it's better to prevent people from changing things.
Ellie, thanks a lot for that call. Ellie, you mentioned a while back that, you know, 100-ish years ago, one of the big impacts of the filibuster had to do with limiting various kinds of civil rights legislation and, I think, anti-lynching legislation. Can we look now in 2021 and say the filibuster has affected our public policy, what actually passes Congress in X way? And if so, what is that way?
Well, I think, you know, the filibuster prevents some bits of, you know, potentially popular legislation from passing because, you know, a minority of folks are opposed to it. So, you know, I think we could think of, you know, some of the things that are coming up. You know, we saw this with, you know, some of the COVID relief stuff, you know, being scaled back. The bills were very popular, but they were scaled back because you needed to get 60 votes to actually break the filibuster. So a smaller package was passed that I think the voters and most senators would have approved. You know, you could also think about things like the Democrats, you know, big effort to sort of change, expand sort of voting protection, some anti-corruption efforts, the sort of H.R. 1 bill, I think are pretty popular if you actually look at the polling data. And I think there's a majority of senators in favor, but there's never that stuff never going to fly with the filibuster in place.
We're talking to Professor Eleanor Neff Powell from UW-Madison, looking at the filibuster in the U.S. Senate, how it works, how it's changed over the years, and tensions over possible changes to the way it works. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think that the filibuster needs to change? If so, why? If not, why not? Do you have questions for how it works? Is there a particular change you'd like to see, big or small? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about the U.S. Senate filibuster and possible reforms or changes maybe in the works. Eleanor Neff Powell is with us, Booth Fowler Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Madison. You can join in with your thoughts, arguments, and questions at 800-642-1234. Ellie, before we go back to our callers, one argument I've seen for the filibuster is that it can help limit the ability of the government to make drastic changes. So total Republican control of the White House and both houses of Congress in 2016 switches to total Democratic control for 2020 or 2021 now. And so that means you're not turning the steering wheel far to the right and then back toward the left and oscillating back and forth. Is there some value in that?
There certainly is, and that's been one of the sort of longest standing arguments in favor of the filibuster. It sort of biases policy towards the existing, biases future changes towards the existing policy. So it's tough to move policy away from what we currently have. And so I think the question really in terms of filibuster reform is, you know, are you generally happy with the laws that we have? Are you generally happy with the sort of changes that we have? Or do you think sort of more drastic changes are necessary? And if you think more drastic changes are necessary, willing to potentially pay the price that, you know, your more drastic changes that you like now might be, you know, swung in the opposite direction in a couple of years if the opposite party takes control. And so it is sort of a difficult, you know, cost benefit analysis in terms of, you know, thinking through the time horizons and, you know, what's needed. I think the hard part about the filibuster is, you know, if big things need to happen quickly, if the world changes, you know, we think about the pandemic over the last year, the state of the world changed very quickly. Things like the filibuster prevent the government from responding quickly to those changes by making it harder to change the policy apparatus. So again, there are certainly downsides to changing the filibuster. There are potential upsides too. These are tough calls. There's a reason why these are not easy decisions.
Go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Yeah, she's right that it isn't an easy decision, but the question becomes, are the Republicans working in good faith to achieve what the filibuster is supposed to do? And I think if you look at literally there was an insurrection against the U.S. government, and I would argue liberal processes in general, we really have hit total war. And if you look at things like the way the Republicans have manipulated the voting rights to increase their share of state legislators, which impact everything along the way, I think we have an obligation. It's a duty, and it hurts and it's painful, but they've left us no choice by trying to overthrow the government. That is not going to go away. And we just have to use liberal processes like, you know, what's left of the Justice Department and move forward as aggressively as possible, period.
John, thanks for the call. John making the argument, I think, Ellie, that Democrats, he'd rather not see it happen. But given what Republicans have done, according to John, Democrats don't have a lot of choice but to change the filibuster.
Yeah, and I think he's raised a number of really important issues. I think, you know, even putting aside things like the insurrection at the Capitol, which is, you know, a grievous, you know, calamitous situation, you know, I think there's an argument that, you know, the filibuster is being used now by both parties in ways in which it was never intended. The exploitation, everything's being delayed, everything's being blocked. And that was never really the point. This was sort of supposed to be a rare exception for things that were really urgent or sort of really deeply felt policy opposition. And so we sort of have this sort of broken system where everything is being blocked and delayed potentially by a single member unless you can get, you know, 60 people to oppose it. And so this is also sort of broken and the system not working as intended. So, you know, I think there's a perfectly valid argument to say that, you know, there's not good faith opposition. There's, you know, incredible blockages on all sorts of policymaking right now. And the system is broken in a variety of ways.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. So Democrats in the narrow majority here with the tiebreaker vice president. Mitch McConnell, as Senate Majority Leader, he was under a lot of pressure from President Trump, same party, Republican, to end the filibuster, then make it easier to get their agenda passed. He didn't make that change then, except, of course, with Supreme Court justices. What do you think of that decision? He didn't run with this tool in a way that Democrats are talking about maybe doing now.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we've seen this sort of gradual change to the filibuster over the last few years, where, you know, we saw some minor changes in 2011, 2012, 2013, 2017, 2019. So it's sort of being sort of gradually ebbed away, and nobody sort of wants to fully rip the Band-Aid and get rid of the thing. So McConnell didn't do any wholesale reforms. I think part of that is, I think McConnell was able to accomplish a lot of his goals on things that are exempt from filibuster rules. So, you know, clearly, you know, filling the court with conservative judges was one of his top priorities, at which he was extremely successful. That's one of the exceptions to the filibuster. And, you know, some of the budgetary changes that, you know, were also sort of top priorities were also exceptions that where the filibuster didn't apply. And so I think this sort of filibuster, you know, helped him block things that the president might have, President Trump might have wanted to do that McConnell was less enthusiastic about, but it let him, you know, achieve his big priorities and sort of focus on the things that he really cared about.
We are talking about the U.S. Senate filibuster, possible changes to it, with Eleanor Neff Powell from UW-Madison. Back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Cindy joins us now in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me like the filibuster has become a tool to benefit the special interests, the political parties, but really not to do much for the people. So I think it's kind of gone astray.
Cindy, thanks for the call. Ellie, what do you think?
I certainly think the filibuster is being used in all sorts of ways it wasn't intended. I don't know if it necessarily particularly advantages the special interests, but, you know, I certainly think it's true that there are lots of issues in which the American public has agreement, in which even a majority of senators agree, but the filibuster blocks. And so I think that is a problem from a sort of small d Democratic governance perspective.
Thanks for the call, Cindy. Keith is with us now in Madison. Keith, hi. Are you there, Keith? Not hearing Keith. You know, I should ask before we run out of time, Eleanor, about polarization in the Senate. And I believe it's fair to say more polarized than it used to be. Does that affect the use of the filibuster now?
I mean, so much more polarized than it used to be. The Democrats and Republicans agree on very, very little right now. And there used to be a lot of agreement. There used to be, you know, Southern conservative Democrats who are more conservative than some of the more liberal Republicans. And that just is a thing of the past now. And it makes it even harder to find compromise or find people willing to cross party lines to break a filibuster. You know, that's the hardest part right now. The Democrats need Republicans and a lot of Republicans to break a single filibuster. And given how far apart the parties are right now, that's almost impossible to find on most issues.
Let's try another caller. John is with us in Heartland. John, hi.
Well, hi. I would like to see in the future sort of us go back to a two-thirds vote, whether the filibuster is there or not, just so that the left and the right, Republicans and Democrats, learn to get along and compromise and work with each other towards legislation that makes sense for the majority of people that are out there.
John, thanks for the call. So John's saying raise the bar, and he sees that maybe incentivizing bipartisan cooperation to actually get things done. Do you see that as a possible outcome of that, Eleanor?
I mean, I love the idea and the spirit of that question. I'm pretty skeptical given how sort of toxic relations are between the parties and how far apart they are in most issues, that making it harder to pass legislation would encourage them to compromise. I think we would just end up with fewer issues passed, fewer problems addressed. And, you know, maybe you'd find sort of semi-tepid compromises on a small number of issues. But basically, I think that would make it harder for the Congress to do anything.
Thanks a lot for that call. Let's spend our last couple of minutes looking at what might come out of this. We're hearing from key senators, I might like this change, or in some cases, and then maybe not. And we've heard President Biden weigh in, bring back the talking filibuster. What are you watching for now, Ellie, over the next month or two to see if Democrats are actually going to make some kind of filibuster changes?
Well, I think it all hinges on the conservative Democrats, who essentially are the ones who could block any reform. So if the Democrats are going to pass a reform, they need every single Democrat on board, plus VP Harris, to sort of force through a rule change. You know, right now, you know, Senator Manchin, Senator Sinema, a couple of others have sort of issued statements saying that they're pretty opposed to basically any change. Manchin sort of opened the door on a couple of things, but you've got to convince them all. And what's really tough about that is these sort of conservative Democrats are the ones who actually sort of benefit from the filibuster, because they get to be incredibly influential when their party's in the majority. And then when they're in the minority, the majority party still needs to, you know, woo them and get them on board so they can, you know, extract all sorts of resources for their state. So, you know, Joe Manchin from West Virginia can sort of force the Republicans to, you know, build all these infrastructure projects in West Virginia in order to get his vote, or whatever else he needs, which they wouldn't need to do if they got rid of the filibuster. And so, you know, you're basically asking, you know, those folks to give up their power, not just now, but also in the future. And that's a pretty tough sell for senators who like their own influence in the chamber.
A lot to watch in the days to come. Ellie, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Eleanor Neff Powell is the Booth Fowler Associate Professor of Political Science and the Trice Faculty Scholar at UW-Madison. We talked to her today about tensions around the filibuster in the U.S. Senate and what possible reforms to it could look like.